You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, tax cuts and clean water are just two of the issues state lawmakers may tackle in the weeks ahead. We'll talk with Democratic and Republican legislators on their top priorities for the year. Now, President Trump is offering more explanations about what led the U.S. to kill Iranian military commander Qasem Soleimani last week. At an unrelated event at the White House today, Trump was asked about the strike and the members of Congress who were upset with him for not disclosing more of the details leading up to it.
We caught a total monster, and we took him out, and that should have happened a long time ago. We did it because they were looking to blow up our embassy. We also did it for other reasons that were very obvious. Somebody died. One of our military people died. People were badly wounded just a week before. And we did it. And we had a shot at him, and I took it, and that shot was pinpoint accurate, and that was the end of a monster.
Up until today, the administration had said Soleimani was planning imminent attacks on U.S. personnel, but didn't elaborate. In the meantime, Iran's U.N. ambassador said that the missiles that were fired at U.S. military bases in Iraq were payback for Soleimani's killing, and that there were no plans for additional attacks unless the U.S. hits Iran again. Carl Kaltenthaler is a professor of political science and director of security studies at the University of Akron. He's also an adjunct professor of political science at Case Western Reserve University. He's an expert in counterterrorism in the Middle East, as well as a consultant to the U.S. Department of Defense. Carl, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Well, this mention kind of off the cuff, it seems like, the president saying we did it because they were looking to blow up our embassy. What do you make of that statement from the president today?
It's possible that the intelligence said that. It's hard to tell. Obviously, this is stuff that's kept under wraps because it is intelligence. You don't want to reveal sources and methods or what we specifically find out. So that could be what they saw, or it could potentially be an exaggeration. I don't know.
Right, because this had been after Iranian-backed groups in Iraq had been protesting by the U.S. embassy, attacking it in some ways. So it may have just been a statement about what was happening there. Is that one way to read that potentially?
It is possible. And another thing that's been going on is there have been mortar attacks and even rocket attacks into what's called the Green Zone. So the Green Zone is part of Baghdad that is walled off from the rest of the city where the embassies are. And our embassy is within the Green Zone. So that area gets attacked every once in a while. In fact, it just got attacked within the last 24 hours. We're not sure if it was aimed exactly at the embassy, but it fell fairly close, the fire. And so, you know, that could be what he's referring to.
Well, let's step back from the president's statement there and look at the lead up to this attack. Have we seen an escalation from Iranian-affiliated groups in Iraq when it comes to attacks on U.S. personnel or bases?
Yeah, absolutely. There have been a lot of rocket attacks against U.S. bases in Iraq. Part of that is to pressure the United States to leave the country, and I believe part of it is also to provoke an American response. So the idea is that you don't want to provoke an overwhelming military response from the United States, but you want to provoke a response that's going to make American forces in Iraq even more unpopular than they are. And we saw that as a response to the Soleimani attack, that there was a lot of anti-American sentiment generated within Iraq, and there was a lot of pressure put on politicians to make the United States withdraw. So these rocket attacks, they did provoke the United States. I'm sure the Iranians never thought that it was going to go as far as it did with an attack on Soleimani. But to a degree, the Iranians, while they lost a very, very influential and powerful figure within their political sphere, they have got the wind at their backs now in Iraq to get U.S. forces to withdraw. And that is definitely a goal for Iran.
When people were talking about U.S. Strategy and policy in Iraq when it comes to Iran, go back even a week in time. Was anybody talking about a targeted strike against Qasem Soleimani?
I never heard it in the circles that I speak to. That was something that I had never heard of except in the media and in the recesses of the media that had been discussed in the past. in terms of Obama and Bush looking at policy options to deal with Soleimani, because he was such a powerful adversary to the United States and our allies in the region. But it was always looked at as a very remote policy option because it was considered too potentially dangerous. The consequences were too difficult to foresee in terms of what it would bring about if we were to kill Soleimani. And so I was fairly shocked, I have to say, when I saw the news report saying that Soleimani had been taken out, and in the way that it had been done, too. That also, to me, was fairly shocking. Right outside of Baghdad airport, that was not what I was expecting.
Carl Kaltenthaler is with us from the University of Akron, looking at ongoing tensions between the United States and Iran. Carl, looking at what both countries are saying now, it seems like things are not spiraling in a more destructive direction right now. It seems like both countries stepped back a little bit. Is that a fair way to look at what's happened over the last, 24 hours?
Absolutely. I don't know if I'd even say a little bit. I think I'd say a lot. Both countries, I think, are sending very clear signals, pretty unambiguous signals, that they want to de-escalate this situation. And to me, that's a very positive thing, because that means that we reduce the likelihood of having cross signals where people may get into a conflict that they didn't really want to get into. Both sides are making it pretty clear that they want to de-escalate and they want to work this out peacefully. As I've said many times to many different audiences, neither of these governments want war. But at the same time, they both have interests that they're trying to achieve. And this is the core problem, is that the American interests and the Iranian interests in the Middle East are on a collision course. They have been for years. It's very difficult to come to a negotiated settlement that makes both sides feel like they're safe, that their interests are protected.
President Trump, in his speech about the Iranian missile attack, laid out kind of a timeline. President Obama reaches this nuclear deal, returns money to the Iranian regime, tries to engage with it. And that, President Trump said, in effect, led Iran to do worse things, to be more aggressive in its actions in the Middle East. Is that a fair statement?
I don't know if I would agree with that assessment. I think that a lot of people, myself included, were relieved to see a deal reached with Iran where Iran was clearly and openly not moving towards nuclear weapons. And so what I mean by clearly is that they had inspections. And so those inspections showed that Iran was not moving towards a nuclear weapon. Did Iran do other things in the Middle East that we didn't particularly like? Yes. Some of those things include developing ballistic missiles and helping develop and arm and fund proxies that were looked at as dangerous to America's allies and potentially to America's own security interests. And so what the Trump administration is trying to do is essentially get a much bigger deal than simply getting the Iranians to not develop nuclear weapons. They want a deal where the Iranians no longer fund, support, arm these various proxy groups, and they stop developing ballistic missiles. That's a very tall order, because to do that, you have to essentially get the Iranians to say that they're giving up on some of the central tenets of their security policy. They look at these proxies, these allies of theirs in the Middle East, as essential to their security. Because Iran does not have the conventional capability to defend itself against America or its allies. They have a pretty weak navy. They have a pretty weak army, pretty weak air force. What they depend on are these proxy groups, for example, Hezbollah, these militias in Iraq, to keep what they view as keep them safe. And so if a U.S. demand is that Iran has to stop supporting these groups, it's difficult to see the Iranians do that.
We're talking about ongoing tensions between the U.S. and Iran with Carl Kaltenthaler. He's a political science professor and director of security studies at the University of Akron. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question for our guest? What do you think about where things stand as of this moment with Iran? Do you think that the administration made the right call in this targeted killing of Qasem Soleimani? Or are you worried about that leading maybe to war? Should President Trump have gotten congressional approval or at least consulted with Congress about that strike? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Right now, we're talking about the ongoing tensions with Iran. Carl Kaltenthaler is our guest, professor of political science and director of security studies at the University of Akron. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you feel about things stand with Iran right now? What do you think of the way the president is handling the situation? Was this targeted killing of Iran's military commander, Qasem Soleimani, the right move, or do you worry that it brings us closer to war? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. And then, Carl, we have this tragedy in the midst of this, this Ukrainian airplane taking off from Tehran. A lot of conspiracies will go around about this, but we're hearing reports from American and Canadian intelligence sources that it looks like some kind of Iranian missile launch, possibly by accident. How does this factor into all of this?
Well, I think it's very embarrassing for the Iranians because I think it's most likely that after they launched the missiles, they were expecting potentially an American response. They very likely could have thought that this was an American airplane that had come into their airspace, and they launched countermeasures against this plane, and it turned out to be a tragedy. This is one of the things that you see when you have countries on very high alert. There's a lot of tension. Unfortunately, these kinds of unintended losses of life happen. So this is why it's good to ratchet things down, to not have everybody thinking that an attack is imminent, and we'll have less of these kind of tragedies happen.
I want to get your thoughts on Iraq and its government now and the concept of Iraqi sovereignty. We've got Iran's now deceased military commander doing a lot of operations within Iraqi borders. This American strike without apparently consultation with the Iraqi government targeting that Iranian leader just outside of Baghdad. What are the Iraqis looking at as they're caught between Iran and the United States?
Iraq right now is in a very, very precarious place. Iraq is reeling from domestic political unrest with demonstrations against the government. There's a huge amount of unrest in the country, dissatisfaction with the political status quo. And so that is enough for the Iraqi government to try to handle. And the response in Iraq to these protests has been brutal. And part of that brutal response has come from militias that are aided and directed by Iranian security officials. So there's also a lot of resentment in Iraq. I would go so far as to say real anger towards Iran for supporting this government and supporting these militias that have really not done anything to help Iraq in terms of bringing good governance, clean governance, that kind of thing. At the same time, Iraqis are increasingly frustrated with the United States because they believe that the United States is to a degree fighting a proxy war against Iran in Iraq. So Iraqis are being put in the middle. They're being punished for something that they didn't start. So this has the potential, this tension, this tug of war between Iran and the United States, to destabilize Iraq further than it already is. And that could be very detrimental to the Iranians, the Iraqis, and the United States.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Yordis is with us in Colfax. Yordis, hi.
Hi. There's so many reasons this is wrong. I could go on forever, but the main comment I had was that Trump said he was going to go after 52 sites, including cultural sites, and this is an international war crime. And his ignorance is astonishing, and his amoral attitude, I know he took it back, but the genie is out of the bottle. And I just wondered how this rhetoric is so inflammatory and dangerous in the world.
Jordis, thanks for the call. Carl, that comment from the president targeting multiple sites, including cultural sites in Iran.
Yeah, well, I've talked about this with people both in the United States and in Iran. Just today, I had an interview with Iranian media. And, you know, both sides are engaging in heated rhetoric. And a lot of this has to do with trying to placate their domestic bases. And, you know, you've got to wonder how much of this is actually directed at the other side to try to deter them from doing something, or if this is just meant to, you know, make their domestic political supporters think that they're being tough. They're not showing weakness in the face of the other side. I think both sides would do well to ratchet down the inflammatory statements. They don't help anything. And hopefully we'll see that into the future, that both sides will kind of, you know, think twice before they say some of these things, which just don't help the situation.
Jordis, thanks for the call. Jack joins us now in Caledonia. Jack, hello.
Hi, how you guys doing? Yeah, my comment is about the different fashions in the Middle East with the different countries, leaders with the different sects, the different warlords, the different clans. Somebody should make a chess game board, you know, with different pieces and that, you know, so people can understand who's on whose side at what given opportunity.
Jack, thanks for the call. Carl, it's a complicated political landscape, but not an understatement at all.
No, absolutely not. The caller is very accurate in describing it as a complex place. And, you know, the more you get into this area, the more complex you realize it is, because, you know, it's not just sects of Islam or regional differences, ethnic differences. There's also tribal differences that play a very large role in many of these countries. And the sects themselves are fragmented. Yeah, I pay a lot of attention to what goes on in Iraq and Syria because of the security implications of those situations. And it is tremendously complex. Just following, for example, what's going on in Iraq right now, in the face of the Soleimani killing and then the Iranian response, to track all the different factions of Iraqi politics that are at play right now, vying for influence with each other. It's tough. And so, you know, one of the things the United States needs is people who know these things, because you can make the wrong decisions if you don't understand who the various actors are, what their interests are, what capabilities they have. So, you know, this is why our intelligence community, for example, really wants area experts, people who know this area of the world, so that they can give good clarifications of what's going on and what potential policies could mean.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Carl Carlton Thaler is with us from the University of Akron, looking at the latest with the U.S., Iran, and the region. Back to your calls now. Bradley is with us in Tupelo, Mississippi. Bradley, hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What do you want to bring up, Bradley?
Okay, really quickly, where does Israel fit into all of this? I haven't heard a thing, and I would like to get your guest's opinion on that.
Bradley, thanks for the call. All I've heard, Carl, is it sounds like Israel is trying to stay at arm's length from this dispute, at least in public statements.
You're absolutely right. Israel is trying to stay out of this. They do not want to get brought into this for several reasons. One, Israel does not want to get into a conflict it doesn't need to be involved in. The other thing is that when Israel gets involved, it creates a whole new dimension to the conflict because of how radioactive Israel is in the Arab world. So to keep Israel out is good for Israel, and I don't think the United States necessarily wants to get Israel involved in this either. And I don't even think the Iranians do. As much as they talk about death to Israel and they want to destroy the Jewish state and all that, they are very wary of Israel. They know Israel's capabilities. They know Israel does not hold back from retaliating against attacks. So Israel is staying out of this, and I don't think anybody else really wants to drag Israel into it.
Another country that doesn't seem to want to be dragged in is Saudi Arabia. What do you make of their response to all of this?
Yeah, this is interesting. I've talked to some Saudi officials recently about this. They were very concerned after the Soleimani attack that potentially they would get targeted. Saudi Arabia's defensive capabilities or ability to take on Iran are not as strong as Israel's. They do have a lot of backing from the United States, but Iran has shown a capability of hurting Saudi Arabia with the attack that happened, for example, on the Aramco facilities there. And those were carried out by proxies of Iran. So Saudi Arabia, they also don't want to get involved in a conflict. There's nothing to be gained from them in getting involved in a conflict, particularly in a conflict in Iraq. Most players in the region want this to die down. They want this to be a chapter that they would like to move from and then hopefully get a more stable Middle East.
You said most. Is there someone you see potentially benefiting from an escalation of conflict there?
Yeah, some group that we haven't discussed at all so far, and that's ISIS. ISIS benefits from this, and so does Al-Qaeda. And the reason for that is that ISIS benefits particularly, even more than Al-Qaeda, from Sunni-Shia conflict. So anything that looks like Shias are gaining power or that there's a Sunni-Shia conflict in the region, that helps ISIS. Another thing that helps ISIS is when the U.S. government is distracted from its fight against ISIS. And we saw that happen this week where U.S. forces stood down in their anti-ISIS operations because they were expecting an attack from the Iranians. But the other thing is that the Iraqi government, because it's so preoccupied with the protests and now with this political turmoil caused by the Soleimani strike, their eyes kind of off the ball when it comes to fighting ISIS. And a lot of people incorrectly think that ISIS is down for the count. ISIS is weakened, certainly, but ISIS is still engaging in an insurgency in Iraq and in Syria.
Lots to keep our eye on, Carl. Thanks for joining us today.
Sure.
That's Carl Kaltenthaler, professor of political science at the University of Akron. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time here on the Ideas Network.